101.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported JAZZ 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 10th of November, Anno Domini 2012, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. It's time for the news. Before we do anything, I have two thank yous that I need to say. First, I want to thank you.
You're welcome.
For your pledges, not you, for all those of you who became members of the Soundbites family and the Jazz 90.1 family. We reached our goal, which means that we're good for a while. So I'm honored and humbled to those of you who reached into your hearts and reached into your wallets, like I always say, to become a member of this family, and I personally just want to thank you all for that. We're very pleased to know we'll be here for a while longer, and also since tomorrow, because of tomorrow, I want to thank all those of you who have served, certainly those of you who have put yourselves in harm's way, but we sometimes forget that for every one person at the front, there are eight people supporting them, and I want to thank all of them as well. Because without them, the rest of it doesn't get done. So thank you all for your service to this country and for keeping me safe in my little trundle bed at night.
My wife is a veteran also, so she was looking at all the different veterans ceremonies that are going around town. And except she's plotting out all the free food she can get. Veterans breakfast here, veterans lunch here.
Name me a single soldier who doesn't go for a free meal.
Yeah.
Well, one of the other things I got to put a shout out to, too, which is kind of unspoken, which I belong to, is the Patriot Guard.
Yep.
A lot of those folks are honoring these fallen soldiers and people that have served and standing guard at the various services and that. And I've had the honor to be at a number of them, along with the Honor Flight.
Yeah.
They do it about five times. Nigel is the head of the group here. And, I mean, he does a stellar job. I mean, just making sure the word gets out, him and Patch and a bunch of the others, you know, and getting folks there to honor those folks that, you know, gave their lives, the ultimate sacrifice.
Yep.
So we can sit here and do what we do and, you know, and just go along our regular lives, because without that, you know,
that's right,
we wouldn't be doing it.
Right. Now, from the sublime to the ridiculous, Twitter has unintentionally sent a password reset email to users whose accounts hadn't been compromised, the company announced on its status page. The company has emailed an undetermined but apparently large number of users, asking them to reset their passwords, leading to a flurry of tweets discussing the possibility of a widespread hacking problem. I also apologize. I'm very sibilant today. I have a sinus infection, and it's changed the shape of my jaw as the pressure. I'm on antibiotics, but...
So your voice recognition software may not work.
That's exactly right.
Oh, it's
Don't
all
laugh
so
about that.
Yeah.
While the issue is not as widespread as initially thought, the company's statement does say that it believes some accounts have indeed been compromised. In addition to Twitter's confirmation, we already knew some accounts had been hacked. For instance, TechCrunch posted suspicious messages on Twitter's a few hours before regaining control of its account, and it would be interesting to know what caused this issue in the first place. Here's the statement Twitter published. We're committed to keeping Twitter a safe and open community. As part of that commitment, in instances when we believe an account may have been compromised, we reset the password and send an email letting the account owner know that this happened, along with information about creating a new password. This is a routine part of our processes to protect our users. In this case, we unintentionally send passwords, reset passwords of a large number of accounts beyond those that we believe to have been compromised. We apologize for any inconvenience or confusion this may have caused. One thing is for sure, the fact that Twitter overreacted doesn't take away from the need to protect your account. If you think it may have been hacked, you should reset your password immediately. We also recommend you do this manually rather than using the link Twitter provided in the email you may have received. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Twitter's compromised passwords. And your choices are, OMG, a horror, 125 characters left. Better safe than sorry. I'll change mine anyway. And, of course, twit what now? So far, we have 42 votes. Not shockingly, most of our users don't have any idea what Twitter is. When you're done with that, though, I know you'll have more to say. So please look at the yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion, and it will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
AskNick.com.
Where you can enter your opinion. So far, we've got 8 people who have entered an opinion, and hopefully there will be more. So, and then come on back and join us, because that's our question to you. Do you have a Twitter account? And how do you use it? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. And because we're the pledge drive is over, we won't be embarrassing you by asking you if you are if you pledged. You're welcome. That's we're those kind of nice guys. I'll tell you, I don't use Twitter all that much anymore. I'm mostly on Google Plus now. I keep Facebook because my daughter's on it, and I have a bunch of old friends, friends who I've had for a long time, not that any of them are actually old. But I tend, aside from the conversations I have with friends on Facebook, I tend to have more in-depth and really interesting conversations on Google Plus than I do on Facebook.
It seems like Facebook has been adopted by the masses, and Google Plus is still mostly the technical literate.
Well, and what's interesting, a lot of artists are there. I have to brag. I've said before that Ellen follows me on Facebook, and she follows me first. She followed me first on Google Plus. Terry Pratchett follows me.
Nice.
And followed me first. So I was very thrilled. But I do. I tend to have... And so it's not just the technologically literate on Google+. There are a lot of artists, writers, painters, photographers. Jim Hines is on. I could go in and name 50 writers that I converse with on Google Plus, but there's just a bunch of them, and you have real conversations, I think, more on Google Plus than you do on Facebook, and certainly more than you can do on Twitter. Twitter is, I guess there is a reason that you would take pictures of the food you've eaten. Or you're eating.
That's Instagram.
Why?
Yeah, people do it all the time.
My wife does pictures. That all the time.
I'm about to eat this sandwich. I don't care. You know, I personally would rather invite someone to eat with me than show them a picture of something I ate by myself.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just me, I guess. I guess it's just me. I also am old enough to remember we used bathrooms for taking something other than our pictures.
I was going to say, is that saying that we're getting a little... older?
I want to say wiser.
Okay. I like that better.
I have often said to people that I am old enough now that I not only don't suffer fools gladly, I don't suffer them at all. And I don't have to. I have worked very hard all my life to be a curmudgeon. And now I'm finally old enough that people don't get angry about it. And he's just old. And
if you're a rung curmudgeon,
I've heard your visitor.
You can't really be called a curmudgeon yet, can you? You're just a surly teenager.
But we can also
surly something, certainly. Yeah.
And we can also write it off to CRS on some of the other stuff selectively.
That's exactly right.
Wait a minute. I don't remember that.
Yeah, I don't remember that, and I don't remember you, and I don't want to talk to you. Go take a picture of your food. Or take your shirt off, take a picture of yourself in the mirror. I really don't need that. It gets you out of a lot of conversations.
Oh, yeah.
Gets you out of a lot of things.
And they just get this glassy-eyed look, and it's like, okay, we won't go there.
Right.
Leave that one alone.
Just drop any non-sequitur into a conversation and get glassy-eyed, and they walk away. So, okay,
that's the fun. You can just sit back and go,
Yep.
Did okay on that one. Yep.
There's got to be, there's got to be a way programmatically to filter out all that crap but still keep the good stuff to come through. How do you define what the good stuff is?
Yeah, exactly. Or they'll find ways around that and other choice of words or phrases.
Well, you can't do it right through Google, but if you use the Google API, you can certainly write your own code. Then you never go to Google itself. You go to whatever program or app or website you've created. And I guess I don't know how you filter things out. I filter things out by unfriending people. I've unfollowed, uncircled a massive number of people this last campaign season because they never had anything to say that wasn't overtly political. And all they were doing was each and every one of them resending the same thing I'd gotten already from somebody else. So I thought, if you have nothing interesting to say to me, then I don't need to hear your noise in my stream.
Did you see Donald Trump's tweets after the election? They've been deleted, but somebody's got to have them somewhere.
Donald Trump.
He's just ranting and raving about how how stupid everyone is, and we're screwed for another 4 years. And
can someone explain to me why Donald Trump?
Yeah.
I don't watch him. I don't listen to him. Life is way too short.
One of the things that he did post that was kind of interesting to me is that he said, the country's so divided. Yes, it is. It's about 49% Republican and about 49% Democrat. So whoever won, the country's going to be divided.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just the way it is.
Yeah, yep. That's just the way it is. I don't know. It was too much hate. Too much hate on both sides. And I'm not saying I dumped all Democrats or I dumped all Republicans. I pretty much believe I dumped people in equal numbers. I didn't really pay attention to...
I say you were an equal opportunist?
Exactly right. There was just too much hate. Too much negativity. I just don't need it anymore in my life. If you want to hate, go ahead and hate. Don't try to involve me.
You know, the one rule... that was always, our grandparents always said, and it was drilled in my head constantly, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all.
Well, there's an old phrase.
There'd be an awful lot of dead air, though.
Yeah, that's the truth.
That might give folks pause to think a little bit more.
There's an old saying, it's nice to be nice. And I just dumped a whole bunch of people. If all they had to say was negative things. I'm into social media to get new ideas, to discuss ideas, to chat with people. If all you're going to do is spew vitriol or parrot somebody else's talking points, Democrat or Republican, I don't want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not thinking for yourself, I'm not interested in what you have to say.
See, that always strikes me as crazy about every political candidate. They are absolutely convinced that they're right and the other guy's wrong.
Well, they have to be to run for office.
And the other guy thinks exactly the same thing.
And the sad thing is, I believe they're both right.
They're both right, yeah. So that's why I like...
In their own minds.
The other guy's an idiot.
I like Zaphod Beeblebrox, the president of the galaxy. If you want to run for president, that's a sure sign that you're not right for the job.
That's right. That's exactly right.
One of the other things I noticed quite a bit on TV is they're really trying to push this Windows 8.
Oh, they really
are. Hawaii 5.0 has always been a big Windows product placement. They're always, let's Bing it. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Well, last night they did they had a Windows 8 tablet where they were showing off something. Well, when that was filmed, it wasn't available yet. So, no, okay, they got some back doors in there. All right.
Yep. Oh, the thing's been available for months.
Yeah, you could get...
All they had to do was make sure that whatever prototype they were using actually worked for what they were doing. It may not have done anything else.
Yeah, because Final Code was out there for a good while.
Yeah.
To, you know, and even, you know, the beta, the simplicity that they were using it. You know,
I am very impressed by some of the new Ultra books, how very thin they are and how very nice they are.
But again, you know,
Oh, I meant to bring. I have a Lenovo Excite L10, LE10. And it's ridiculously thin and
light. Is it exciting?
It is actually, because you hand it to somebody and it really looks like a pad from Star Trek.
Yep.
It's that thin. And that light.
Is that the one that has the two screens on it? You open it up
No, it's a tablet. It's just a plain tablet.
Yeah, all right. I've seen an Ultrabook PC where you open it up like a regular laptop and there's a screen. And then you close it and there's another screen and it becomes a tablet.
That one I really want to see.
That's easier. It's cheaper to put two screens on than just to have the thing flip around.
The problem with flipping around, because there's another one that flips like the old mirrors.
Yeah.
And I worry
all those
about
wires,
that. Yeah, the hinges and the
they
wires.
They tried that before and had major
that's
issues.
That's exactly right. And that's why I'm thinking if they actually put two screens in, it might cost a little more, but there's certainly a lot less mechanical junk to go wrong.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a break. Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. Day, but we better say, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we've got Sal from Fairport on the line. Welcome, Sal. What's your question?
Hey, guys. No, actually, you know, I was going to ask, did you hear the one of the, I guess the smart covers, they're already splitting at the seam on these new Windows Surface computers.
Say that again?
Yeah, I'm sorry, you broke up.
The smart cover, the cover on these Windows Surface.
Yeah.
Oh, the keyboard thingy?
Yeah, the keyboard thing. It's already splitting at the seams.
Uh-huh. Splitting at the seams.
That's Windows build quality.
Yeah,
nice.
Great build quality. Anyway, just wanted to see if you saw that news.
No,
nice. I had not seen that. Thanks.
Sure.
Appreciate it.
Oh, that's interesting. That's, yeah.
Did they rush it to market?
That's one of the problems with any new product.
Yeah.
If you haven't done enough testing, these things can happen. And the problem is, way too many people don't do enough testing.
Right. Well, especially Microsoft. The tradition, the first three products are crap, and by the fourth one, they get it right.
Yeah, right. But you would think, well, and the problem is not that they don't do enough testing because they don't want to or whatever that is. The reason they don't do enough testing is because nobody lets them.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to bring a product to market, you're going to bring it to product to market right now. Because we don't make money if you don't bring it to market right now. Well, we'd like a little more time to do right now. But the keyboard, right now. So I get that. And, it's certainly not necessarily the fault of the engineers. But you cut a corner and you pay the price.
Materials or whatever.
Yeah, we'll actually look into that and see what the story is.
I'd like
is.
To know, you know, have some of our listeners call in that actually have played with Windows 8 and know their take on it, and say some of these other folks that work at various businesses, how soon they're going to jump on board with Windows 8.
Yep. I have not been able to install it as a virtual machine on any of my machines yet.
No, we got it on one, and like I say,
Yeah. All right, our next caller is Ray from Rochester, New York. Sorry. Ray? Are you there, Ray?
Let's see.
No, apparently he is not. Hold on, Ray.
Dave's trying other buttons.
Dave's playing with the buttons. We'll see what happens. Are you there?
We overwhelmed the phone system during the pledge drive.
No.
Ray? Call back, please, Ray. Sorry, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I mean, it was lit. All my buttons are ready to go.
I had that problem with my wife's phone. She called me several times last week, and nothing. And it turned out to be that the earphone plug was jammed up somehow. So she had been using the earphone and then took it out, and it thought it was still on the
earplug. And didn't switch back to speakerphone. Yeah. Dave's going to reboot the system.
Dave, go. Dave is quietly rebooting the system as he goes. In the meantime, you had something that I cut you off.
Well, yeah, just with Windows 8, it's just so different. But we did have a caller a few weeks ago that that got it and liked it. As soon as you get used to it, it's so different.
Well, there are a couple of things about it that you need to understand right away. One of which is, see, he did it too. One of which is that whole screen you see with all the tiles. That's your start menu.
Yep.
And so when you select something, one of two things happens. You either run, it's not called Metro, some modern, the modern interface. You either run one of those apps directly there, or it's an old style app and it switches the machine over to the desktop.
Yep.
So you have to be aware that that's going to happen and which one you're supposed to be on and yada, yada. The other part of that problem, which is actually worse, is that the stuff that runs in Metro or Modern or whichever it is not necessarily the same thing as what runs on the desktop. So you could start Internet Explorer as a Metro app, Modern app, whatever one it is, and then go into the desktop and start Internet Explorer as a desktop app, and they are two different versions.
Yep.
And so you can shut one down but not shut the other down. And I suspect we're going to find people are having the problem some Mac people had for many years where you've got 50 copies of something on your desktop.
Yeah, right, not realizing that,
it's
closing one doesn't close the other.
Right, right. Anyway, we'll see. Anyway.
Rebooting did it.
Excellent. Back to the phone. Sorry, Ray, please call us back. Back to the phones. It's Bob from Henrietta. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Oh, good afternoon. You've always got the Alt-F4 key to kill applications. That still works.
Yeah, that does still work. Are you using Windows 8?
Yeah, I've got it on a few machines. I've been playing with it for a while. As an operating system goes, as a Windows version it goes, it's not too bad. It's actually a little faster than 7 on identical hardware, I get the feeling. The only problem is the user interface is as confusing as, well, something that ends with double hockey sticks.
Yeah.
They're going after people that liked Windows Phone because it's the same interface there.
Well,
and
I'll
that's
say
a huge market, isn't it?
It's confusing as all hell, and I don't. And I've said this way before it was even released that people just aren't going to take to this change. It's too much. That if Microsoft would have been wise, if Bill Gates gives me a call, I'll let him know that, you know, give me the option to go between Windows 8. New interface and the old Windows look. Let me toggle and let me, at my pace, get comfortable with it.
Right now,
and then nobody will go back.
Right,
nobody will go to the new one.
Right now, that's extremely difficult to do. There are some guides online tweaking registries, and you don't want to do that. But I'm wondering if Microsoft might respond to pressure, especially from Enterprise, to add that feature back, like they've done with extending the life of XP and extending the life of other apps that they've been trying to
kill.
The
real problem to me, and of course, you know, the history of Microsoft is they lose, they own the market. So even so, I have to say that I cannot imagine that it's a good idea, and Apple's doing the same thing, and I don't like it there. That you take the interface that works great on a phone or a small tablet and make it your desktop interface. I just don't see that as being viable.
Yep.
Just do not.
Well, it's just like tablets. You're not going to, and we've said this, you're not going to use a tablet to do all your computing needs. You're still going to want either a laptop or a desktop unit to do major port of your stuff. But it's handy to have the tablet or your phone to get at stuff when you need it.
Tech-savvy people aren't going to have a problem with it. The people that are going to have a problem with it are the non-techies.
Yeah.
Right.
The average person in the street.
Yeah. Right, and that's the problem that Microsoft has always had. They're run by techies. Now, the theory is that Apple is not run by techies, but they're doing the same thing. So, you know, these guys make a heck of a lot more money than I do, so maybe
that
they know something
right.
I don't.
Yeah,
well, amen to that one.
We'll see, but I don't see this as the best alternative. Let's just put it that way.
No, they could have done something else, but as an operating system goes, once you know how to use it, I don't seem to have a problem with it.
No, and I get that. And particularly, it depends on what you do. I suppose if you do one or two or three things regularly, then you learn those one or two or three things and you're kind of done, right?
No, I'm all over the map.
Yeah, but for those people who are all over the map, it's going to take longer to learn, and there's going to be a lot of fumbling and frustration.
Unless you already understand if you understand how it's different from the get-go, it's not going to be a problem for people.
Right.
But those are the tech-savvy people,
right,
and that's a pretty small percentage of the market. They're going to tick off a lot of the people who have this forced down their throat.
Thank you. That's
kidding.
What I said a long time ago.
You aren't kidding. This is a big chance for Apple, but even more so for Linux.
Yes,
oh, yeah,
Linux.
Ubuntu, if they want to properly promote Ubuntu, this is going to be their best opportunity they're going to see for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone said that during the Vista fiasco, but...
But they didn't do it, is the thing.
But Ubuntu wasn't quite so user-friendly back then.
Well, but Ubuntu now has this whole Unity thing, which is not that much different from what Apple and Microsoft are doing. It's when you go to something like Linux Mint and you see their Cinnamon or whatever the other one is called. Mate interfaces that you see... you know, what looks more like a traditional desktop. You can get desktops under Linux that look exactly like Windows or exactly like the Mac if you want them. I mean, there's nothing magic about either one of those. The dock across the bottom of a Mac I had 15 years ago under Red Hat. I forget the Enlightenment, maybe? I don't remember, but... The point is that none of that is magic. The way it looks, well, of course, Apple, God knows, has copyrighted the rectangle. So theoretically,
copyright the store if they could.
Yeah, right.
They have the design of the
about
Apple
the
Store.
I wasn't talking about the desktop user interface for being the difference between the Vista era and now. Back in the Vista era, hardware recognition was somewhat more chancy and more tech-savvy on Ubuntu than it is now. Ubuntu's installers pick up everything these days.
Yeah, you're not kidding. I just installed Mate, Linux Mint 13.
Well, that's a derivative anyway.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that's
what I'm saying. Yeah, a Mate on a laptop, and every single thing worked out of the box.
Even 3 or 4 years ago, you would have to, sometimes have to do some kind of research to get a wireless driver or something like that to work. But that's all pretty much out of the box these days, and that's going to be a big advantage if they're going to try to mass market that.
Yeah. What was funny was I was installing it, and wireless driver didn't work. I was starting to get angry, and suddenly somebody came to my door and said, "Can you get wireless? Because I think it's down." Oh, okay. I waited about an hour, tried it again. Oh, yeah, here it is. It's back. Thank you very much.
No, I just wanted to pass a few comments along.
Thanks a lot, Bob. I appreciate it.
Have a good...
But this is the thing. What also interests me is you can extend the life of your hardware with Linux. If you've got an older laptop, you're certainly not going to run Windows 8 on it. You're probably not going to run Windows 7 on it. But you can certainly run any one of 1,000 versions of Linux on it. And right now I'm thinking Linux Mint is actually a little more user-friendly for the beginner than Ubuntu is. But they're both, Mint is Ubuntu under the covers. They've just put a slightly more commonly understandable user interface on the front. Anyway, our next caller, it's Ray. He's back from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ray. We missed you.
Oh, okay. First of all, I don't use Twitter. I've gotten off of Facebook, and I'm impressed Terry Pratchett is following you.
Me too. It's a bragging right.
One of my favorite authors. I wonder if I can ask an iPhone question.
I don't know. Can you?
I probably can.
All right. Give it a shot.
I got a very older iPhone. I got it last year. It's the iPhone 3GS, and I downloaded the I downloaded the latest OS update, and it seems for some reason every once in a while I'm losing a lot of battery power. Is that something I can get around?
It has been an issue on some of the older phones. Usually the biggest fix is to turn off radio things you're not using. Turn off Bluetooth when you're not using it. Turn off 3G and just stick with 2G, depending on what cellular signals you're getting in the area.
Okay.
You can also decrease the lock time. So if you've got the phone waiting to lock for 10 minutes, you know, set it back to 5.
Go ahead.
You go ahead while I'm finding.
Okay, the big one to me is what you're running on it. So if you're checking for mail every minute, or you've got 5 or 6, or as I had at one point, 10 different news apps, they're all checking all the time. And that killed my I was getting 5 hours out of my battery. Just for the heck of it, I set my email to push, which is really all you need, because that means when mail is available, the server tells me I don't have to go check it. And I got rid of all my apps, and I go through a 12-hour day. I've still got 50% of my battery left.
Yeah, we were actually talking about this before the show. You can turn off your location services. There's a feature, you know, remind me to get milk when I leave work. So the GPS and location is always running, checking to see if you've left work yet.
Okay.
You can set your notifications to push rather than pull, like Nick was saying, so that it doesn't check all the time. It waits for something else to get pushed to it.
And check all your apps for what they're doing in terms of updating.
I don't really have it using mail. I don't have any news things. The one thing I did do is I turned off the roaming and the data. So the only time I'm using anything is if I'm in my home with my wireless network. So
yeah, that's good.
I've tried to shut everything else off, and sometimes it seems like it's all right for a while, and then all of a sudden I'm dropped down to like 50, 40%.
One of the things to do is if you double tap the home button, it will bring up your list of running apps. And it's the way iOS works is you launch an app and it runs, and if you quit that app, it doesn't really quit. It just goes to sleep in the background, waiting for you to go back into it again. So if you double tap the home button, you'll find all of those apps that are running. You can tap and hold on them and then quit those running apps, and that may help also.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. And we want to thank you all for the continued member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Bill from Webster, New York, right here on the line. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Hey, I've got a Thunderbird question, but before we get to that, you were asking earlier about businesses and switching over to Windows 8.
Yep.
Yep.
My comment is the businesses I support have been burned so many times with Windows new versions not working correctly and giving them headaches that, quite frankly, none of them are ready to switch out of XP until something absolutely won't work with XP.
Right.
So I don't see them going to Windows 8 anytime soon. And they haven't gone to 7 yet.
And when you buy a new computer now, it almost guaranteed will come with Windows 8 unless you can find a leftover Windows 7 model anywhere. Mm-hmm. So that's usually what
and
forces.
That'll probably be the switchover point. But
yep.
But
you can
Microsoft
still
has earned a reputation for causing businesses big headaches.
Oh yes.
Well, some places you can still ask for what they call a downgrade.
Yeah.
Right.
And that'll be available for a while, unless, as Steve says, they get so much pressure.
I think
that they'll keep Windows 7 or turn Windows 8. In. They give you the option or turn it into, you know, it's that Metro or Modern or whichever. I don't even remember the name, and I don't apparently care enough.
Well, Metro got they got sued over Metro.
I haven't seen it yet. When you put that on a desktop, do you need a touch screen to run it, or
no? Well, that's the point.
Mouse?
It was designed for a touch screen,
right.
And now using
arms.
It with the mouse is a little difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go to this corner to do something you used to be able
swipe.
To double click with.
And,
yeah, it's
okay.
Just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, you heard it here first. I predicted months ago that this was going to be another Vista, and I can confidently say now, Windows ME.
See, he gets a smile on his face now when he says Windows ME.
Well, I'm a firm believer, if you look historically, that every other operating system that Windows has come out with has been a dog.
Yeah, it's the even-numbered bad operating systems, which is the opposite of the Star Trek things. The even numbers were good.
And the DOS.
Yeah.
And DOS,
well,
yeah.
At any rate, back to Thunderbird. Recently, Thunderbird upgraded, I think it's version 16, whatever it is, but the most recent upgrade, and I did it on my computer. I'm running XP, by the way, on that particular computer. And I've got two IDs on there, one for myself and my wife. And I upgraded it on my ID and ran all right. And so when I went over and signed in on her ID and allowed it to upgrade, ever since then on her ID, quite often when she opens Thunderbird, you'll get this message. It says, processing folder, please wait, and then there's an OK button. And it just sits there like forever. And if you hit OK, what you notice is that down in the toolbar, all of a sudden you'll have like seven instances of Thunderbird open. And the only way out of it is to do the file exit and close all of them and then start all over again. Do you have any idea what's causing that to happen?
The Mozilla knowledge base has a dozen different possible causes.
Yeah, that's the point. It could be antivirus problem, could be a firewall problem. It could be
other spyware programs.
Compacting.
I was up on the knowledge base, and I tried a couple of those things, and it was kind of looking to me like I could spend an awful lot of time troubleshooting this. So I was hoping you guys would have a magic solution for me.
No, I would love to have a magic solution for you, but I do not. I have not seen the problem yet, myself personally. But,
yeah, me neither.
Well, what's really curious to me is that it does it on one logon and not on the other one.
Now, you're using the exact same... Oh, and on the same computer.
Right.
There might be a permission error to that,
yeah,
that Mozilla folder in that specific username.
Could be.
Which is one of their possibilities.
Okay.
There's one of the things they recommend running is the repair and compact folder process. Yeah, run that yourself, and theoretically that will find any problems in your mail library. And
is that in Thunderbird? Or?
Yes, in Thunderbird.
Yeah, what you do is first turn off automatic mail checking.
Okay.
For the time you're doing this, right?
Yeah.
Then what you do is you go into properties, general information, and repair folder.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because it does seem to happen when it... my gut feeling is it happens when it's downloading emails off the server.
Yeah, it may have been that one of the folders got corrupted.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, when it downloads new stuff, it age deletes the old stuff, but it isn't really deleted. It's just marked for deletion, and that's what that compacting folders does. It actually does delete all the stuff that's in that library.
All right, well, I'll give that a try and see where we can go from there.
Right, and for heaven's sake, once you've started that...
Happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Yep. Once you've started that, don't touch Thunderbird until it's done, and then don't forget to turn back on automatic mail checking.
I've seen issues like that in Outlook Express, which was notorious for keeping all your mail in one giant database. Or was that Outlook? One of them kept your mail in one giant database,
mm-hmm.
And there used to be about a 2 gigabyte limit.
PST file.
Yeah,
had
the PST, yeah.
Limit. Well, the operating system had a 2 gig limit.
And then they raised that to a 4 gig limit. And it didn't error out or didn't stop working when you broke the limit. It just started accumulating crap and garbage until it quit working at some future date, which was really annoying.
Right. Okay, our next caller is Denise.
Dennis, I'm sorry.
Dennis, okay.
I did correct it, didn't I? But
you changed the S to a C and then added an E.
So it's Den Nice now.
Yeah. I could have guessed Dennis. I could have guessed Denise. I guessed Denise.
Oh, man.
Sorry, Dennis. What's your question?
Well, that's okay. Denise, Dennis, whatever, whichever way you want to do it.
It's good to know you're confident in yourself.
I was thinking of my old street, Den Nice Road.
There you go.
Right. I know where that is. I wanted to ask you a couple questions about Adobe Flash on my Windows 7 desktop.
Yeah.
If I'm on, when I'm on Firefox and I may play a video and it must require Flash because, well, and then the thing stops or it's done or I just decide to cancel it. And then I try and do another video. I get the start and stop stuff, and then and my whole Firefox freezes up. So I go to Task Manager, and I see Flash is twice on the
Yep.
Why is that?
Because Flash is horrible software.
Yeah, there really
memory
is
hungry,
no better way to put this. Flash is crap. That's why Apple has banned it from their devices. That's why Android has banned it from their devices.
And Adobe themselves have stopped developing mobile Flash, and they're deprecating desktop Flash because they want you to move to what's their new technology? I just lost my Air.
Air.
But the biggest issue with Flash is that it gets updated so frequently because of the problems and especially security holes that you're continually updating your versions. In fact, I got another update notice when I turned my computer on before the show. And you never know what that's going to conflict with in other plugins you might have.
Okay, so then maybe the best thing is for me to uninstall Flash and use what then?
The problem is there isn't really an alternative that does everything.
Many websites have already shifted over to H.264 and HTML5. Google has been pushing WebM, but there's still a lot of older websites, and especially game websites, that are using Flash.
Zynga's stuff is all in Flash.
Yeah.
And shockingly, they're losing customers. Why? People are now using devices that don't do Flash.
Yep.
Duh.
If you use YouTube a lot, most of their videos have been converted over to HTML5.
Well, the new ones
the
are
new
all
ones,
HTML5.
Right.
There's a lot of old ones. There's a billion old ones.
Yep.
That are still Flash.
So I don't have any alternative at this point in time.
Unfortunately, there isn't really a good alternative to Flash, particularly the newest versions of Flash. There are some things that'll do the older versions, but Foxit has some stuff that'll do a number of Adobe things. But the newest versions of Flash just simply, there's no equivalent.
And Chrome has its own Flash built into it, and Google handles the updates themselves. But with the Adobe Flash plugin, you have to keep updating it, and you'll keep getting update notices. And the bad guys have realized that, and they've started putting out fake Flash updates because people are used to having to update Flash all the time.
Hmm.
If Flash is just a badly handled technology.
It was great in the olden days. It was one of the first animation tools that came to the web.
Yeah. And it was write once,
everybody
read
used
everywhere.
It, yeah.
Yep.
Run everywhere, rather. And that's great, but the problem is they did not, I think, put the number of resources into it they should have. And it may well be that the initial underlying platform just doesn't lend itself to that kind of upgrading.
So is there any time frame as to when something is going to be available to everybody that will substitute for Flash?
I don't know that anybody's writing anything that'll substitute for Flash.
The internet is moving to different standards, HTML5 and H.264, but all that old stuff is still going to be lying around. Mm-hmm. Every now and then I find a site that still uses Reel, and I have to install the Reel player.
Yeah. or just not go there
anymore.
Yeah,
yeah.
Really.
Well, and people are going to find that. You know, the people that do not, the websites that do not upgrade from Flash to, say, HTML5 are going to find themselves falling by the wayside. Zynga, I'm talking to you.
And OMG Pop, you know, a lot of the game companies,
yep,
they've been releasing apps for iOS and Android instead of Flash-based websites.
Right.
Does Chrome handle Flash any better than Firefox?
A little. A little. It can't hurt to try it, but okay, No one's promising anything. Particularly if something has used the latest shortcuts in the latest version of Flash.
Okay.
You'd think that the Flash developers, see, that's the problem. The Flash developers are scared for their jobs. You'd think they'd learn the new stuff so that they could start doing everything in the new stuff.
And I know people who've invested 5, 6, 7, 10 years to learning and using and doing Flash. And now all of a sudden,
yep,
you know, they have to start all over again, and they're 10 years older.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, it really is.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yep. Sorry.
Okay.
So that's what we're seeing is that most developers now, what we're seeing is they're releasing iOS apps and Android apps that you run on your mobile device, and they're not doing the web apps anymore.
Right. Is that the music in the background? No.
No. That's okay. Dave turned his mic on. There's still a little bit of a echo. When you turn your mic on, mm-hmm. Nick's gets a little echoey, which is weird. Echoey.
There's nothing we can do about that. But yeah, we really need alternatives, better alternatives to Flash. And they're, the folks in the IRC chat are saying that MPlayer or VLC, you should understand the real codec. But when it comes to Flash, there's really nothing. Nobody cares anymore. Nobody cares. You know, the people, all those people playing all the VILs, the various VILs, are all in Flash, and there's a shrinking number of machines you can run it on.
Right. Yep. VLC, for me, for the most part, works fine for everything.
Everything runs on everything. Yeah. Everything works.
One of the things we'd said over the years, when the iPhone, iOS, and iPad are coming out and Flash doesn't run on them, that every time some CEO tries to go to his own company's website and there's a giant empty square, he's going to make sure that his website gets changed.
Yeah, right now, of course, most CEOs aren't going to their own websites.
and that was always the big annoying thing about Flash anyway, that some people would overdo Flash, and you go to the website and there's a giant empty rectangle
right.
until Flash loads. Well, that might take 10, 15 seconds.
Right.
Flash has always been a little memory hungry.
And for people who are into SEO, search engine optimization, for the longest time, Google couldn't, and still in many cases, can't index what's in the Flash. So you lose in the search engines because it can't figure out what's. I know people who've written their entire sites in Flash,
yep.
and they come to me and say, I can't find it in Google. You can't find it in anything,
yep.
Because nothing can index Flash. So if you want to be in the indexes, in the indices, excuse me, you really need to deal with that. But it's a problem all over the place, and Flash has the development has been slowed, if not stopped entirely, on certain platforms. So the pool of devices that will run Flash are shrinking. So when you want to get involved in something like one of the VILs for Zynga, and even Zynga starting at least, a lot of their smaller games are in apps as opposed to having to go to the website and play them in Flash. But we'll see what that goes on. I think HTML5 that's going to do it. All right, we're going to take a slightly longer break. This entire hour has thankfully passed us by now, and so we're going to take a slightly longer break. But there is an entire other hour of this show coming up, so please stay tuned. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. Get your dialing finger ready, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite. You know, we were talking about HTML5 versus Flash. Well, straight out of Google's creative lab comes Jam with Chrome. an experimental interactive web app that lets friends jam together from different locations directly from their Chrome browser. Tapping the latest web technologies, including HTML5-based features such as Web Audio API, WebSockets, Canvas, and CSS3, Jam with Chrome lets you select 19 different instruments, including guitars, drums, and keyboards.
I just crashed my Chrome.
I'm sorry. You can switch between them at will. The app defaults to easy mode, and there are four different autoplay functions that puts the instruments in the hands of the machines, while the pro mode lets you control any of the musical tools with your keyboard. You can invite up to three other friends to participate in your jam. Clearly, I went to the doctor this morning and got a medicine for my sinus infection.
Oh, my head is so...
Clearly, it's cutting in. Whee! This release actually falls 2 days after Google rolled out Chrome version 23.0.127.1.64.
Left elbow.
Jay. Which included support for the Do Not Track protocol. It also includes track support for HTML5 video, which provides a standard way to add subtitles, captions, descriptions, chapters, and metadata to videos. The HTML5 browser wars have started to take shape this year with Mozilla's Firefox launching an HTML5 3D first-person shooter demo back in August, and Microsoft going all in with a series of HTML5-based browser games aimed at Internet Explorer. As for Jam with Chrome, this is evidently an experimental toy of sorts for Google, demonstrating the latent potential of HTML5 and web-based applications. I've played around with it a bit. It is kind of neat. It's at http://jamwithchrome.com. Have you jammed with Chrome? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. It's a pretty neat toy. We were also looking at HTML5test.com and seeing how our browsers scored there. And, of course, HTML5demos.com, which is a list of HTML5 demos. Duh. And there are some pretty nifty ones. And what's nice about this is it shows you what they run on. So that's kind of nice. And you can see, which browsers they actually work with. Pretty nice. Pretty nice. All right. Back to the phones while you go play with those. We're going to talk to Henry from Brighton. Welcome, Henry. What's your question?
Hi. When you're using the backup utility in Microsoft Windows 7, and you back up to, let's say, an external hard drive, can you actually see, if you go into the folder that contains the backup, can you see the files that you've backed up, or are they kind of encrypted in a way that you can't really examine them?
I've never really used the I've never been a fan back with Windows, believe it or not. 98. Never got into using the backup programs because, yeah, they create disk, and, yeah, you can use it to backup. I shouldn't say you can't, but yes, you can use it, and yes, you can see the files. But I prefer not relying on Microsoft because too often, they have, and again, previous experience, that you could get through part of it, and then all of a sudden...
The backup worked great, but Restore had problems.
Yeah. And there's so many other third-party programs out there that you can get for free. You can go to get Google Drive and 5 gig of data free, that any key files that are important to you, put them up there.
But with these third-party programs, if you want to create, for instance, an image file of your whole drive,
mm-hmm.
Can you use that package, that software, on multiple machines?
Well, I know, you get, Norton Ghost.
That depends on the license of each program.
Right.
But the other part of the question, of course, is always, are you sure that's what you want to do?
Yeah, exactly.
When you create an exact image, it includes all the specialized drivers for that particular hardware. If you've got 40 or 50 machines of identical hardware, then creating an image to put on each one makes sense.
We're only talking about three machines here.
Are they identical?
And even sometimes when they're identical on the front, they're not identical on the inside.
Exactly. If they are not identical, then restoring an image from one machine onto a non-identical...
I wouldn't be doing that. I would always restore the right image to the right computer.
Yeah, and that's something you have to keep remembering yourself.
Right,
when you're
have
doing
to keep track of that. But again, let me suggest something else. When you have... I guess I understand it, but you better make sure that machine is really clean before you do this.
Yeah, I mean, it had to be out of the box, not hooked up to the internet yet. Got everything set up and make an image then that I'd know it was totally 100% clean and at that given point in time. Because once you start playing around with other drivers, it can cause issues and hiccups and everything else that if you do the image on that, you're inheriting all those glitches.
All the cruft.
And say you've installed the various programs and didn't use uninstaller, Revo uninstaller to uninstall them, you've got a lot of extra bulk there, too, that you really don't need that if you were going to install, say, fresh.
Yeah, that's the big advantage of backing up just your documents. And then if you need to rebuild the machine, you install a clean OS, you install clean applications, and then restore your documents.
Mm-hmm.
It takes longer that way, but it's usually better in the long run.
Such is life.
See, we see a lot of businesses will do image backups because they want to restore instantly. You know, because if their employee is down, they're not generating money. So they want it to be restored as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But we do that. At the Saunders College, we just bought 65 machines that are identical. We made one image and put them on all the machines. If a machine dies, we can put that image back. But then, let's say it's 6 months down the road. We put the image back on. Now it's got to go through all the updates. Now it's got to go through all the changes. It still doesn't have all the documents from that user.
Right.
There's a bunch of things that are just not going to be right. And... it's certainly your choice, but to do what you want to do, you're going to have to buy a product like Ghost.
And a lot of people use multiple products. They'll make a Ghost image and then use Cobain backup, not Cobain, Cobian.
Cobian. Now you're Dave.
Yeah, now I'm Dave. Yeah, a backup program. Cobian backup.
I'm contagious.
Windows backup or Cobian backup is another backup program that we've talked about. Use that for your day-to-day changed file backups. And in the Mac side, there's Carbon Copy Cloner and Super Duper, which will do identical clone copies.
And for what is it, $5 a month, there's Carbonite.
And,
again, that's for each machine, it's $5 a month.
Yeah.
The Crash Plan has an interesting option. It's free if you use your own hard drive, but you can also use a friend's hard drive. So you put a hard drive at a friend's house, and they put one at your house, and so you back up to each other's houses. And that's free, and off-site, which is pretty cute.
Yeah,
and getting a network attached storage device is only a couple of $100 now.
And then so you have one network hard drive on your home network and back up all your computers to that one drive.
Right. So you have to set up if you had three machines with Windows 7, you have to set them up as a network and then back up to that one drive.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. They likely already are set up as a network because you're getting to the internet on each of them. So that is a network, which is
but if you're going to do something like Ghost, then you're going to want it probably is best to back it up to a DVD.
LaCie, which was one of the brand hard drives we sell, a lot of their NAS drives, their network attached storage, they're now calling them CloudBox. Because cloud is the name people know.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
You say network attached storage, and that sounds too techie. But a 1 terabyte cloud box is $120. That's not much more than a 1 terabyte hard drive. And inside this cloud box is a little Linux computer sharing your data to the cloud.
Yep.
That's a heck of a deal. I'm going to have to make a note to buy some of those for our store.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. I think we came down on Henry a little hard there, but...
being honest.
In general, the whole idea of Ghost backing up your entire hard drive is okay if it's an initial image. But if you do it a second, third, fourth time, say once a month, once a quarter, whatever, as Dave said, you bring along all the cruft that you've added to that machine over that time, and that's the stuff that contributed to you having to restore it anyway. So what you're doing is just restoring the same problems that caused you to have to restore to begin with. It's mm-hmm. not, I yeah. think, yeah. it's not, I think, the best way to handle the situation. Backing up your documents, and then if you do have a problem, just reinstall the operating system clean. The other thing about reinstalling the operating system clean is that part of that is the system itself doing a check of the hard drive and blocking off any bad sectors on the hard drive. So there's less likelihood that you restore something to a bad part of the hard drive. So that's another reason to actually do the reinstall rather yeah. than the restore.
It's the choice between a fast backup or a fast restore. You can't have both. Mm-hmm. And for businesses, the fast restore is a bigger option.
Yeah, it's not an option, though, because, like I said, you do a fast restore, and then you have to upgrade everything, yep. update everything anyway. It still takes another 2 hours. So the little bit of time you save is useless if you're restoring from the initial image. And more importantly, it's useless if you're restoring from a new image, from a frequently taken image, because you're just bringing the cruft along with you. Where you save on a restore, an image restore, is you don't have to go and download any specialized drivers again.
Right.
So if there are no specialized drivers, you're not really gaining anything. All right, our next caller is Rick from Irondequoit. Welcome, Rick. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. Question on this, all this backup stuff you guys are talking about. I do backup and have a Western Digital hard drive external. What my problem is that I don't know if I'm setting it up right, because I'll delete a file and from either the hard drive or from my laptop, and then it shows up again.
It depends if you're running synchronization software or backup software, and if that backup software supports archiving. Normally, when you back up your stuff, it backs up all the files, and you have a second copy of all your files. If you delete a file on your computer, it's not deleted from the backup drive, because half the point is I accidentally deleted it, so I need to get it back. If you're using a synchronization program, then it does synchronize by deleting from the backup drive. Or if your backup doesn't support archiving, where it doesn't remember the old files that have deleted, then when you delete something from one drive, it's gone from the other. So you need to be careful about the settings in the backup program, that you don't want it to delete your old files on the backup drive.
Right, because many people will say, oh, I don't need this on my machine anymore because I've got a backup copy. You delete it from the machine, and that syncs the delete from the backup drive, and now it really is gone forever.
And it's no longer a backup, yeah.
Okay. Well, one of the programs that I do use, Western Digital, of course, comes with one right on their hard drive. But then there's also one that I use from Microsoft called SyncToy. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
No. Yeah.
It's a little application that, again, like I know you're talking about syncing files, but in some cases I think I've had better luck with that than anything else. As far as it's just I'll rearrange my files,
yeah, part
and
of
then I'll do and I know what you're saying, a sync or a backup, and it seems like it goes back to the way it was.
Because that's what sync is supposed to do. SyncToy is part of the PowerToy suite from Microsoft. And what synchronize means is make all of them the same. So what's interesting is you delete it from one, it could have deleted it from the other to make it same, or it brings it back from the other to make it the same.
And that depends on how you set it up.
Right, so sync is not backup. That's probably the key thing to remember, that syncing is not backing up.
Well, I kind of call it backing up because I'm making a copy of, we'll say, my folder on the laptop onto the hard drive, or the portable hard drive,
right,
considering that my backup.
Well, except that, again, if you delete from one, it deletes from the other because they're syncing.
Okay.
And so you can't say, oh, I don't need this on my laptop because I have it on the network drive, so I'll delete it from my laptop, because what sync will then do is delete it from the network drive too.
And
or
sync,
put
sync
it back, correct?
Right.
Or put it back, yeah, depends sync, on how you've got it set up.
SyncToy has three modes, two-way sync or one-way sync. So okay. It sounds like you might have it set up for one-way sync.
And
so,
one-way sync goes either laptop to network drive or network drive to laptop.
Right. So you're deleting something on one drive, it's syncing it back from the other drive.
Would you suggest then that maybe I only back up or sync from my laptop to the hard drive so that I'm making all my changes on the laptop and then just a
yeah,
backup?
I wouldn't touch the backup ever.
Yeah, okay. Use a backup program, not a sync program.
All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 19 minutes after the hour. Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Al, our friend Al from Rochester, on the line. Welcome, Al.
Hey,
what's
guys.
Your question?
Hey, you tired yet from all this backup talk?
No, we'll talk to you about anything. You know that.
Okay, well, I got to throw my two cents in, because I know what your thoughts are. I've listened closely to you guys over the last couple months. I'm going to have to respectfully disagree on the topic of...
Oh, hang up on him.
Yeah, okay.
I'll pot him down.
I know where you live.
But I have control of the board.
Right. Well, okay, go ahead and disagree.
So I got to disagree on the concept that a full backup of a system with the ultimate goal of that being your parachute if you need to do a restore is not a good thing. I say quite the contrary. That the amount of time I take to set up a system and install the applications and get them all polished and tweaked the way I want is not inconsiderable, and to do it from scratch, we're talking weeks before I'm remotely close to where I want to be.
All right, but then as you add more things and do more things and the cruft starts to grow, how do you get rid of that before you take that next backup?
I just do it. If I run into a problem, I got a virus or I got a misbehaving program that's messing up the works, I do a restore, but do a restore to a point in time before that occurred.
And then do a backup?
No. No. I'm doing backups constantly. I back up twice. You know, I do an incremental backup twice a week, and then a full backup, depending on the machine, quarterly or yearly.
Right.
So if I discover a problem in November, worst case, I go back 3 weeks into October.
And you lose 3 weeks worth of data.
Well, I'm not worried about that because I'm separately backing up the
data.
Yeah, that's one of the things we had mentioned is you do that first clone and then you have a second incremental backup too.
Yeah, and that's different from what we were talking about, and that's not a bad thing.
Right, but that's the thing that something like a Ghost and probably the others do very well. They'll do full backups and then incrementals all along.
Yeah,
so you're covered. It just makes me cringe when I think of somebody, especially non-technical, who faced with doing a full build from ground up of everything they've got and accumulated over a couple of years.
We just need to get average people to do a backup at all.
The thing of it is, though, is Al, because you've grown up with it, you know, and you're a lot wiser than a lot of the other folks and know not to, you know, go in doing all these other great changes that could affect your image. You know, you're meticulously going through and putting in the programs, not uninstalling, installing, and all that other stuff, getting things just at that point, and you know your machine is clean, that you can safely do an image. Whereas a lot of folks, they'll get halfway, and, oh, wait, I got to go check my mail or go on the internet
Oh, that's neat, install. Ooh, that's neat, install. Ooh, that's neat, install.
And, you know, then they inherit that stuff that could cause them issues. So I'm not saying doing an image is totally wrong. It just depends on the individual and how much care and time they're going to take to do it safely and correctly.
Oh, sure, and I'd be the first to tout the joys of a brand new fresh machine, everything installed the first time, one time, cleanly.
Yep.
But But then I think about the average person who all they want is, you know, last week everything, the world was fine, and this week I'm in deep trouble.
Yep.
And I just want to get back to last week, and I'll think about what I did in the previous 7 days that might have caused this problem, and maybe I'll take a different path.
Right.
So,
right.
That's all. I mean.
Yep. No. Oh, yeah. No. I agree with you.
So, no. I completely agree.
Yes. Actually, the ultimate goal is get everyone to at least do a backup of some kind, because any kind of a backup is better than no backup.
At the very least, your data.
I could probably say there's more that don't than do. They come into our shop and you sit there and say, "Well, you got backups?"
Nobody told me I needed to.
Oh, I meant to.
Yeah.
Is that bad? Well, depending on how bad you want the information, that's up to you.
Think about how much business we'd lose if people
back.
We had one this week where the it was like 4 or 5 days to recover the data off of failing hard drive, and she didn't understand that was fast.
Yeah.
For a failing hard drive. My personal record is 3 months of recovery, and we got everything back.
Nice.
Yeah.
I can tell you what, we have kids all the time come in and say, "My thesis is on here. And my hard drive died. What do I do?" Go to the backup. The what?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
I had my own daughter lose a paper, you know, late at night. She'd worked all night on it. And the next morning she comes in, it's not there.
Yep.
So we go into Word. And by the way, just to the general audience, if you use Word 2007 or 2010, if you don't know how to do this, get somebody who does. Turn on the automatic make a backup copy of all documents when you start to work on them.
Yep.
Because Windows doesn't do it for you.
That's one feature should be automatically turned on, without, I don't know why Windows, Microsoft didn't do that.
Yeah, and then they bury it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, one last thing I'll get out of the way for other people.
Go for it.
What I would suggest, because you guys are so good about this, but just say to the audience at large, folks, if you do a backup, do a backup, and if you're worried about the technical challenges of the restoring part, go to your local dealers and say, hey, at least you can walk in the door and say, hey, I have this PC. I know it's been doing backups, but now I need it, and I don't know what to do. Can you help me? And I know you guys will.
Yep.
You can do the heavy lifting that only needs to be done once in a blue moon, hopefully.
Yep.
And they can be back together. They don't have to be worried about becoming a system guru to make this all happen.
Right, and that's a brilliant point. If you, for example, just if you've got an image, bring it with you. If you've just got a thumb drive with your documents on it, bring it with you. And when they do a restore of your system, they can put those documents back. You know, that's a great point. But make sure. For everybody else listening out there, I know Al knows this. Make sure that whatever you're backing up to is not on the same machine that you're backing up from.
Like a C drive and a D drive? That's one drive in your computer.
Often enough. And so if, for example, you've got a laptop, back up to something on the network or back up to a thumb drive or burn it to a CD, whatever it is you're going to do, do that, but do not just put it in another folder on your hard drive or another partition on your hard drive, because that's not a backup.
And a lot of people don't.
Thanks, Al.
Okay. Yep. Thanks, guys.
A lot of people don't do backups because it's tedious. And, you know, I have to remember to burn a disk, or I have to remember to copy it, which is why automatic backup programs are nice. Apple has Time Machine, Windows Backup, the Cobian Backup. It automatically backs up, and then you don't have to worry about it other than make sure it still runs.
There's one under Linux called Bacula.
Yeah.
Actually, I think Bacula is available for just about everybody, I think.
Everybody Googling Bacula.
That's exactly
open source
right.
Network backup tool.
Yep.
So you can have your stuff backed up anywhere. And flash drives are pretty cheap to do just your documents. Or, you know, even we were talking earlier, a terabyte hard drive is pretty cheap to back up all your stuff. And if you get a bigger drive than your computer has, that means you can go farther back in time. You can keep 6 months' worth of data or a year's worth of data.
That's exactly right. A product like Bacula, which is free and works on every operating system there is, apparently, will let you do all of that stuff. It's a little geeky to set up. I cannot imagine that there is a computer store in town that wouldn't do that for you for a small fee. Set it up for you, sell you the drive, set it up, bring in your laptop.
Yep. And a lot of hard drives come with their own backup software, too. So that's, another way to do it.
Yep.
You need to do the Bacula Project.
The Bacula Project.
Bram Stoker lost his copyright.
Yeah, it's about expired. 300 years ago. Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from nowhere.
Or was nowhere that, at all. Was that still Al, maybe?
Hold on, Bill. Don't go anywhere.
Bill? We're checking.
We're checking. Even as we speak, we're checking. Joe? All right. That was Bill. We don't have Bill.
Bill, call back. Looks like we might have lost you in the system.
It's Joe from
Cheektowaga. Okay. All righty then. Joe, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, what can we do for you?
Well, I was wondering, I have a few spam filters that I apply to all my incoming mail, and it does weed out a lot of this stuff, you know, this guy over in Nigeria died and he ran a million. You know, and some of it is, you know, your order has been canceled and all this other stuff. I'm just wondering if there's any guidelines you can give us that would indicate, hey, maybe one of these is a problem. Maybe somebody has stolen your identity, is actually trying to do something.
Ooh, that's hard.
Usually they don't tell you they've stolen your identity. That's one thing.
Well, yeah, the problem is I get a lot of stuff like that too. Your Bank of America card has been declined. I don't have a Bank of America card, so they can decline it all day. Most of these are fake. It's often easy to tell because depending on what your email program is, if you hover over the link, it will show you, say, at the bottom of the page what the link actually is. And they'll be from .de, which is Germany, or .bu, which is Belarus, or, you know.
RU for Russia.
RU for Russia.
And the grammar is usually pretty bad. So it's fairly easy to spot the fake ones.
The other thing to do is, if it is, in fact, you are a Bank of America customer, then do not click on the link. Call them or go to their website manually. And that will be an immediate and instant verification or denial of the truth of that email. There's no reason to wonder. You know, I get a lot of stuff for eBay. I don't have an eBay account.
Yeah. I
know it's spam. I don't even bother to open it. If it says eBay, I jump it.
The big caveat is don't click the link in the message because it's probably a fake link. It'll take you to a fake Bank of America page where now it captures your username and password and can log into your real account.
And it may install software when you go there because it's a drive-by download.
Yep.
You can get software downloaded to your machine without ever doing anything yourself except going to the page.
What was that sneaky program where you log into your bank and it had a keystroke logger in it, so you log into your bank, it was draining the money out of your account while it displayed a screen to you in the front saying everything was fine. So normally you'd log into your bank and you'll see the money disappearing. This particular malware would show you the money was there while it was draining your account.
Yep.
If only they used their power for good.
The other thing you can do is, depending on your email program.
Mutt.
You use Mutt. Then no. Yep. I was going to say there are blacklists that you can add in, but no. So what you need to do is to just be aware that in Mutt you don't have, you can set it so that you can either see the HTML or you see the web page-ish look that it's supposed to be. Set it to text only, and then you will see where it's supposed to really take you. Mutt, for those of you who don't know, is a text only command line email program. So you only ever see text, no graphics, none of that nonsense.
Which is how a lot of the malware gets through your email from that graphics.
Help. If you do have something like that, it'll run a helper program like an image viewer, HTML page viewer, whatever.
Right, but you have to tell it to do that as opposed to other things where that's the norm.
I really like what they said, like the first line on their website. All mail user agents suck. This one just sucks less.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, if you have it, I'll finish my thought for everybody else. Actually, if you have a program, some email programs will let you put in blacklists or whitelists. These are sites that you never, blacklist is a site you never want to see, and it gets dumped automatically before you see it. A whitelist is a site you always want to see. So, for example, most websites like Amazon or Spiegel or, you know, whatever, say, be sure to add us to your whitelist so that we're always getting through.
And so you don't get dropped into the junk folder.
Right. Although, bad guys often use the same phrase for their systems as well. Yeah. So you need to be careful all the way around.
And there's similar tools available for mail programs to give you a whitelist or a blacklist so that only people in your address book show up, for example. My mother uses
it's so easy to fake where the mail is coming from anyway because SMTP doesn't have any.
Yeah,
I
get a lot of mail from me, junk mail from me.
So do I.
Or the support team at Jesse Group has sent you this message.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Oh, I don't think so.
Yeah. The other thing.
I sent myself an email. Oh.
Right. You touched on the real problem. Email was designed back in the day when, you know, it was sweetness and light and the age of Aquarius and the 11 people who had email all knew each other, so there was never a problem.
And
but it's
domain,
never grown up.
The DNS list was in the drawer and there were 10 computers on it.
Like 10 computers, right. But it's never grown up. We have never gotten to the point where we verify who the sender is, we verify the receiver, we verify the file before it even gets sent. If we had federated email, and I know that sounds like a bad word, but what it means is essentially specifically authenticated, we wouldn't have any of these.
It's all there. It's just that it's all optional is the problem.
Right, and unless both sides are doing it, it isn't being done. All right, listen, we got to go. Got to take a quick break. Thanks for calling. Back in, I'm sorry, you want to hold on? Hello? He's gone. Sorry. All right. Well, we're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes. It's Soundbites. I'm member supported. Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Dave from Canandaigua on the line. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Well, it's not a question. I actually had a comment about backups in general.
Excellent.
And the trick is that, when I did some support for a small nonprofit in Rochester, came in the office one Monday morning or whatever day it was, and there had been a fire.
Wow.
It had not been bad enough to do any real damage or anything, but it occurred to me right then and there that all the backups I had been doing onto CDs and whatever back then was actually worthless.
Yep.
If you don't have backup off-site, then you don't really have it, because if lightning or fire or who knows what, it's gone.
That is exactly right, and that's why being able to back up to something along the lines of Google Drive or Carbonite or any one of those other things, or as Steve was saying, if you can back up to a server in another building.
Yeah, right,
you
off-site.
Know? One of the things that a friend of mine is doing, and I'm seriously thinking of doing the same thing, is there's a company called Linode, Linode, and they sell Linux servers, so they're easy to set up, and if you get, you know, you pay for whatever size you want, and for most people, the smallest one will handle all their data forever. So you get that, you use something like Bacula to back up all your data to that thing. It costs you a few bucks a month to have that offsite website. And you're on your way. And, you know, anywhere you can get a website that you can actually get down to the nitty gritty and be able to install software yourself for backing up. And suddenly you've got an offsite backup, and you do that, you know, for as an individual, maybe you think, well, that's too much money for me. For even a small company, how much money is too much money to lose all your data?
Right.
Right? I mean, that's, absolutely. You know, that's what you're talking about. It's, I don't know any company that doesn't live or die by the amount of, by its data.
I'm a one-man business, and if I lost my data, I've lost everything.
Exactly. So what's it worth to you to make sure your business, it's business continuity. What's business continuity worth to you?
We hear that all the time in the repair shop. Yeah, this is my business computer. I can't get anything done with it. Well, you might need a backup.
It's worth more than I'm actually paying for it. I'm using Carbonite.
Yeah.
And for $60 a year, I mean, that's one of the most screaming deals that's come along.
It's a ridiculously cheap amount of money to keep your business running.
Yeah. And it might be a tax-deductible business expense.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Everything is, if I think I can get away with it.
Right? Yeah. There you go. We didn't hear that, and we don't know who you are. This is Fred from East Irondequoit.
I do have one philosophical question since you opened the show talking about a presidential election and whatnot.
Oh, do not give me rhetoric.
No, it's not rhetoric at all. Right. It's a philosophical question, and that is that if Al Gore had so much to do with developing the Internet, then why do all the web addresses start with www?
Nice. Very nice.
Very, very good. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
See, now that was funny.
That was
I don't care what your political affiliation is.
That was a good
one.
That
was funny.
That was a good one. We'll give them that.
And there wasn't enough of that this season.
And Tim Berners-Lee actually has an answer for that question. You weren't supposed to see any of that.
No, the www.
The HTTPs and the WWs. Yeah, you just type the address in.
Well, and you can do that now.
Yeah.
We have soundbites.org, but if you go www.soundbites.org, it takes you to the same place.
Yep.
But yeah. And basically, what people don't know mostly is that HTTP is Hypertext Transport Protocol. It's the protocol you use to get to a web page. There are other protocols, FTP, SSH, a whole bunch of them. And that first www is theoretically, at least it's supposed to be, the machine name. So, for example, if I go to rit.edu, that's a website. But if I go to fred.rit.edu, Fred is a machine, a specific server on RIT. I don't know that there is a Fred. Don't bother to go there.
Yeah. Well, in this, when I typed rit.edu, it put the W's in for me.
Right.
Sometimes I've seen websites where it doesn't work without the W's, and
that's
because they've got something configured wrong at their
end. That's just bad configuration. But, yeah, so theoretically, the Internet kind of works backwards. The last thing you put in is like the .org or the .com, and that's the top-level domain, which is really the most important thing. The second last thing you put in is like soundbites. That's the actual domain that you have. And then before that, anything you put in would be a machine on that domain. So if we wanted to, we could set up the soundbites domain to have a web server that could be at www, an archive server that could be at archive.soundbites.org, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We don't have any of that. Don't bother to go to those places. But that's the way larger companies work. So my machine at Saunders actually has a name. And you can tell a lot about where you're going by what the name of the URL is if you know the secret.
A lot of the servers at the U of R are Star Trek characters. So you'll see that sometimes when people give us their email address, and it's on yohura.rochester.edu.
Right. We in the Saunders College, we were originally Disney characters. Now we have a very corporate and very boring way of writing these things. On the other hand, there was a general problem when somebody would say, oh, that's on Tigger, or that's on Poo. Or that, you know, where's my web server? It's on Pooh. or it's on Tigger, or it's on, you know, Eeyore.
Well, yeah, okay. But that's a lot easier.
But now I have
than
to remember that.
Yeah, but then that's still easier, though, if you do a list like that, than having it Bob or Jane or Bill, and they move around departments.
Right.
Because trying to rename it, if you originally set it up with that, that's the name of the computer.
We've gotten computers in where it's the name is in the ex-spouse, and can you change that name for me?
Yeah, right.
I did have one client many years ago. That what they did is go around and x-ray nuclear plants. So we were setting up all their, you know,
I have one of those clients too.
And they go around x-raying the tubing and all that. So they were naming all their computers in the. So they went with the various nuclear plants. Well, then they had to name the server. And they go, and me and this my friend Gary Pafke were sitting around there. And say, well, what should we name the server? And I'm sorry, it's my sick humor. I had to go, how about Chernobyl?
Very nice. Very, very nice.
The owner of the company goes, and right, only you could think of something like that. I says, well, it's a name they'll never forget. You know, you hopefully this one won't melt down on you.
3 Mile Island, and you know, so you name your servers after, it's like naming planes after crashes.
Yeah, that would be a bad idea. Yeah, no kidding.
With a Chevy Nova?
Yeah, right.
Doesn't sell in Spanish countries?
Right.
Nova. Oh, what was the other one that was weird? The Buick, what is it, Lacert? Lacette? It's which apparently means something in France, in French, so they couldn't sell it in Canada very well.
Right.
So it's when you're trying to make up your computer domain name, you know, your company name has to be your domain name, has to be your email name, and your patent search, and so all these names that you have to get to match now. Very hard.
That's a very hard thing now.
Yeah.
Because so many domain names are gone.
Yeah.
You know, and what are you going to do?
Just by squatters.
Well, right. And
yeah,
Let me tell you this. I won't tell you the name of the company.
Okay.
But we're starting, a small business is starting up, and they asked me to do some stuff for them. So I went and looked, and there's the URL they want is free, but there are a couple like it. So I went to one of them, and I said, I'd like to buy that domain name as well. And the guy said, okay, that will be $8,777.
Just because you asked.
Yeah.
Yep.
$8,777 for a domain name that I was only going to buy just to have it. So I said to him, look, there's about 40 domain names that we want to get that are similar. Most of them are about a 20th of what you're charging. Good luck with selling your domain. Click.
Probably is one and only chance of ever selling.
You know,
it.
I don't mind haggling with somebody, but when they start that high, there's no middle we're going to meet at.
No, that's not haggling. That's being obnoxious.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous.
When you hear something like drugs.com sold for $3 million, then you know, that's the windfall. In fact, we hear all the time about people that are squatting on celebrity names and hoping that celebrity is going to want to pay for it. When Exxon and Mobil merged, apparently everyone started registering domain names that were any combination of Exxon and Mobil, Exxon Mobil, Mobil Exxon, Moan, and just hoping that someone would pay for the domain.
What we're going to see next, and it's already happening, is Google Voice numbers. Getting a Google Voice number that has something to do with your company. Because those are going quickly. Well, so getting your name.
That's been common with telephone numbers in general. You want to get a sequence of numbers, or if your phone number can spell out your name.
When I ran the Frog Pond, BBS, the number was 2717663. It spelled BS1 Pond.
Nice. I remember, back to politics again, a few years ago when Mario Cuomo was running for governor again, he had a 1-800 Cuomo line, and no one could spell Cuomo.
Yeah, right.
And there was some butcher in New York that started getting all these calls, and it tripled his phone bill.
yep.
Which is probably good, because usually if you dial a random 800 number, you're going to get a porn line.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? Yeah.
Actually, we've run thousands
of our listeners are now just randomly dialing 800 numbers.
We've run into that with Apple. Their official tech support line is SOS Apple. If you dial S0S Apple, you get something else completely.
All right. While you go dial that number, we're done for another week. I want to thank all those of you who called in. I want to apologize to those of you to whom we did not get. Well, there may not have been any of them this week. Next week, call earlier and more often. For those of you who hung up, I don't know why, but I am sorry we did not get to talk to you. Again, call earlier and more often next week. But we are done for another week. Stay tuned, though, because you're about to hear the best German music you'll hear all week. George is here with Linda to keep him in line, and we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and from the bottom of our hearts, we thank everyone who joined the Soundbites family and the Jazz 90.1 family and became part of member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Here are the Jazz 90.1.